to New York.
Recording live in the center of the American Empire, in an undisclosed location in the Rocky Mountains, tearing down the invisible walls of the overdeveloped world, one interview at a time. The Soulcast with your host, Soul.
Guest is my man Picture Plane, one of my favorite producers and artists and performers in the game right now. This motherfucker and a bunch of his friends put together this awesome venue called the Rhinoceropolis here in Denver. Outside of that, he's just a great artist, intellectual, and bad motherfucker. Let's get it!
Picture Plane, my man, what's up, dude?
What's up, Soul? Yeah.
So you recently moved from Denver to New York, and
well, kind of recently. It's almost been exactly 1 year. I got here on May 1st of 2012.
Well, that's true, and this will probably be broadcast around then. So
May 1st is actually my birthday too. So happy birthday to me. It's the pagan pagan celebration of Beltane. It's like the May Day celebration, fertility celebration, basically.
I didn't know that. I wonder if histories connected?
Yeah, totally. May Day, it's originally, you know, most of our holidays that we celebrate now all have, you know, pagan roots. You know, they're thousands of years old, really. The Beltane or May Day, I heard, like, originally, you know, it's all about sort of like this celebration of like the rebirth of the earth, you know, springtime. And it was even about like giving back to the earth, like spilling the seed, like the symbolic seed, like back into the soil of like whole townships of like people masturbating like onto the soil and shit, like for their crops. Just like pretty cool.
Jesus, that's fucking incredible.
Yeah, spilling the seed, man.
That's fucking awesome. All right. Well, my first question is about the Rhinoceropolis. The Rhinoceropolis, at least to me, the one probably as far as culture goes, is probably the greatest thing I've experienced in Denver was going to the Rhinoceropolis and just like seeing some of the most experimental, most varied music I've ever seen. It was always just a great vibe over there, and obviously it was a kind of birthplace for an awesome scene. So how did the Rhino, like, you know, you helped start that, right?
Yeah, basically I wasn't exactly one of the original four people, but I was there at the very first party that ever happened there, so I helped start it. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, like, what impact did that have on you? Like, how was that? I mean, it seems like that was, like, a pretty important thing in your career, was doing the Rhinoceropolis, or your development.
Yeah, for those that don't know, Rhinoceropolis was, it still is a warehouse in Denver. It's sort of like it's an art gallery and a music venue, and where also people live, and so it's this functioning, warehouse where people live. A lot of touring bands come through there, and it's sort of a house designed to where anything can happen, really. That was the idea, of just like to allow a space where we could do whatever we wanted, you know, outside of any sort of rules by anyone, you know, create our own rules in there. And it's still going on today. I lived there for about 6 years. And yeah, I would say it had a huge impact on who I am today. I mean,
would you call it a squat?
No, we were paying rent there. You know, we had a landlord and stuff. We had this really hilarious, like, Republican-style landlord who just, like, But he really liked us. He was just like, you crazy guys in there, like, you know, he was down for whatever. Like, his total warehouse, there was nothing. If we weren't renting it, I don't think anyone else would be. Like, we built all the rooms in there. It was just like an empty hole, basically, that we started living in. So it was really just about creating our own reality in there, and we did it quite well, and it affected a lot of people. I think it really changed Denver for the best. But, you know, Denver has a history of sort of like experimental living like that, and sort of warehouse culture. There was a space called Monkey Mania before Rhinoceropolis that we really modeled Rhinoceropolis after them. The people who were running Monkey Mania, they moved to Los Angeles, and that was right around the time that Rhino was starting, and it was sort of like the torch was sort of carried on into Rhino, like the spirit of Monkey Mania went into Rhinoceropolis.
I was just, as you're talking, I was remembering the time when we live streamed the rocket launch from your roof.
Oh, yeah.
What was that about, man?
That was a performance art piece I did for this show at a gallery called Do It, where you're supposed to, like, pick, like, all these different artists had, like, wrote these conceptual artworks that were made to be done by other people in this one book, and you're supposed to select one of the pieces and then you do it. And mine was just like this weird poem that just said, shoot off a rocket, draw an eyeball on your stomach, and smash a cage. And so I just did it literally. Like, I built this rocket that I lit off, and then I drew an eyeball on my stomach with lipstick, and then I threw a bird cage off of our roof. And yeah, I like you streamed it live.
That was so fun, man. That was so fun.
That's on YouTube, actually. You can watch that. It's really weird.
I'll find that after the interview and I'll link it in the article, because that was just really funny, man. Those are good times.
It's pretty absurd, you know. Obviously, I picked the like kind of the weirdest one I could in there.
And it was a pretty nice bird cage too, wasn't it? It was
kind of a nice bird cage, yeah.
Yeah.
But I love the smashing a cage. That's like my whole life metaphor, man.
Yeah, indeed. It reminds me of Temporary Autonomous Zone. Like, I feel like that book, you know, obviously you always talk about it. It's a huge...
Have you read that yet? I know you got it.
I read the first three chapters, and it was a little like...
You read the Ontological Anarchy, those ones?
I don't know. I brought it with me to Europe, and then I lost it, and I don't know what happened. I lost that and, like, the other book that I brought, and I don't know what happened to them. So I have to read it again.
You should. I know you'd really, really feel it. It's really up your alley for sure.
So what's so important about this book?
Well, it's just sort of the way it's written. It's sort of like when I first read it, it's written in this way. I feel that it's this really magical text. Like, it's a real alchemical kind of wording that literally kind of can, it's like a deconditioning agent. Like, you read it and it really sort of like washes your brain a little bit and sort of like rewires it, and it's real powerful like that. Like, I don't think a lot of texts can really do that, but it's the guy who wrote it, Hakim Bey, I think he really knows what he's doing. I mean, he's a real deep scholar of the occult, really, and I know that a lot of his work is infused with, it's like a spell almost. And I think that the Temporary Autonomous Zone carries that within it. It's like this, a real, like, positive magic spell, kind of. But anyway, it's more of like just this really, like, fiery, incendiary kind type text that's, like, really angry, and it's really, like, angry at all the right things, basically. It's just like, take no bullshit, take no prisoners, like, fucking smash the people who fucking have control over you, kind of thing. It's like really beautiful, and it's like, just create this beautiful chaos and like be, he coined the term like poetic terrorism. It's like about, you know, like there's one text in there that's just like listing all these amazing things to do, and it's just like, you know, walk into a bank and take a shit on the floor and then eat, and stuff like that, or, you know, it's just like really amazing type stuff, like just being, playing with reality and like subverting these established systems that we have, and just like playing and making people like wake up a little bit. It's just really cool work. I highly recommend it to anyone like interested in magic or politics or anarchism or anything. It's like real good anarcho-mysticism. It's the shit.
Yeah, and I don't know. I just think the idea about, you know, the temporary autonomy, just the concept of the temporary autonomous zone is a really, it's a really powerful idea, you know? Just like creating these liberated spaces, you know?
You know what? You know, Occupy Wall Street was a big temporary autonomous zone, especially down like in New York at Zuccotti Park, just this space of freedom, you know, and protest where people were just sort of alive living there, you know, and sure it had some structure and stuff, but it can still be structured and still be this, a place of like non-hierarchical rules or anything like that. It's just like a space where everyone is welcome to be who they are and do whatever they want to do. And, you know, it could be temporary and still last for months, you know, like,
yeah. No, I mean, it's like, in Denver, a lot of the main people were kind of burner types, you know, Burning Man, kind of traveler kids. And those people don't give a fuck, man. They're down to throw down, a lot of them, you know, so that's cool.
That's cool. Burning Man seems like one big temporary autonomous zone also.
Yeah, it is. I mean, yeah. Have you been?
No, I've been saying I want to go for years now. I have yet to go.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like it's probably, you know, it's probably like super commercialized now, maybe, or maybe not. I don't know.
No, man. I mean, I don't think ever. It is what it is. It seems it gets bigger every year, but there's no like corporate sponsorships or anything like that. It's all, they run it themselves, and they have since the very beginning.
This crazy art, man, like the giant fucking, just, it's a whole nother world there. All right, switching up a little bit. I remember like years ago when, before I moved to Denver, I just remember reading stuff you were writing about the DNC, and you were like, you know, fuck Obama, fuck voting, like we're headed to a police state. And you know, and you got arrested at the DNC.
Yeah.
You know, like what? Like, what do you think?
I feel like if I wasn't a radical before, I feel like that time period around the Democratic National Convention in Denver, like, really radicalized me even more. Like, if you remember, like, you know, it was this insane, just like Obama fever had swept the nation. He was like a pop star, and it was like this great, he was sort of like this, looked at as this savior who was coming to like save the woes of the whole country. You know, we had been through the 8 years of Bush. People were like fucking freaked out, you know, and hating the government. And it's like this, you know, charismatic, like attractive man comes through, and it's like people were like worshiping him before they even knew anything about him, you know. And I just wasn't buying it. And like living in Denver, you know, everywhere, everyone was so stoked on Obama. Like, these art galleries would have, and it was marketed to like a young generation. It was like hip and cool to like Obama and stuff. And, you know, people my age, you know, like making art like with this guy's face on it and stuff. And it's just like, man, you know, what are we doing? Like, sure, this guy seems great, but it's like he represents something that, you know, It's not Obama. Like, you're not voting for Obama, really. It's like, I don't know. Anyway, that was like sort of like disgusting in its own way, kind of this worship of a politician. But
But I mean, look, he did save us. I mean, look at where we're at right now. I mean, everything is perfect.
It's all better, yeah.
So you were totally wrong.
Yeah. And just like seeing this like crazy militarization of Denver, you know, the federal government gave the city of Denver $50 million but for the DNC, but it was only given to the police department for defense. They bought all these new toys, all these insane new tanks and fucking guns and shit, like anti-riot weapons and gear, and people were really pissed. It was like $50 million. Like, we could have put that into our communities. We could have, like, really helped the city in a positive way. Like, what are you so afraid of, you know, that you need $50 million in police riot equipment?
Yeah, and that's also why that's like that's the DNC's legacy, is that now we have you know, one of the biggest surveillance apparatuses in the country. You know, they have like a literally like a movie theater now, where like, you know, they can monitor things real time. Like the governor and the police chief and like all these people can sit in this like giant room with a double helix statue going through the middle of it, and they can watch in real time, like monitor protests through those Halo cameras. And there's pretty much nowhere you can go in downtown Denver without being able to constantly,
wow,
being watched. I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah, like, they, like, you know, I was part of this protest where during the DNC that, you know, it was like an anarchist action. It was like, you know, meet at this point in the park, like Civic Center Park, right by the Capitol, you know, at this time. And it was sort of this like storm the streets type action. It was meant to be like an anti-capitalist march, you know. A lot of kids showed up in like total black bloc, you know. And right away, like, the tensions were sort of high. It was just like crazy. But it was a good like 400 people. And we just like took the streets. We just like started going, walking right down Colfax there, crossing into downtown. And literally within 5 minutes, we had been surrounded by like hundreds of riot cops, people on horseback. There's like fucking helicopter flying around. And they just like, we walked into downtown, so they were able to just like sort of completely corral us inside of these buildings, like in the street. They blocked us off, like circled us, you know, like some really like Braveheart type shit, like these insane military cops and horseback, like circling us. Then, like, they just brought in these huge buses and arrested everyone. No matter if you were just there, like, it was a peaceful protest, you know, we weren't like smashing shit or anything, we were just walking down the street. And they literally arrested hundreds of people on these buses. And they had these buses just for this. It was sort of like they were just sort of waiting to use all this toys. The cops were loving this. They got, you know, this excuse to do all this shit. They took us on these buses, and I remember like being on a bus with all these like crazy anarchist kids, you know, singing these songs like, you know, the wheels on the bus go round and round, and like we're all singing on the bus. It was like the cops, the pigs on the bus go oink, 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 oink. And, you know, we're like, everyone's sort of laughing and shit because we're all in this bullshit together. They took us to, like, this huge empty warehouse that was set up just for, like, a mass arrest. They had all these insane, like, chicken wire, like, fucking temporary jails and just, like, threw everyone in there. There's hundreds of kids in there, people. You know, they arrested everyone, like journalists, like photographers. It didn't matter who you were. If you were walking in that protest, you just got arrested. It was nuts.
That's insane.
Yeah. And so, yeah, that was like really sort of woke me up to just like how it is in the States. You know, it's like, sure, you can go about your day and you have free speech and stuff, and but it's like the moment you try and mobilize to like actually say anything publicly, like boom, they shut you down like quick, you know. And that was mental. There was no coverage or anything on the media or anything. It was just like hundreds of people getting arrested at the same time, and it was just like business as usual type shit. It was crazy.
Yeah, I think they're, I mean, they're especially crazy with the anarchists and the anti-capitalists, and you know, anything that evokes any of that, like the police here.
Oh, there was, I remember, oh, that time period was so crazy. Like, there was an anarchist, like, meeting spot down, they had rented this, like an events hall down the street from Rhinoceropolis. And it was just, like, it was just where people could gather and sort of, like, make banners for protests and, you know, like, distribute literature and... And also, yeah, like, share ideas and stuff. And that got, like, raided hard by riot cops. Like, they just busted in there and, like, fucking confiscated everything. Like, they're confiscating, like, paints and markers and shit, you know, for to, like, make signs with and stuff. Fucking arrested all these kids in there. And this is just for, like you're some conspiring or something against the government. Like, it's, like, you're not allowed to meet in groups and, like, have an opinion on something. It was really wild. We had, like, 20 or so anarchists staying at Rhinoceropolis, like, sleeping on the ground. There was a huge, Iraq or veterans of the Iraq war against the war march down our street, Brighton Boulevard. Like, that was like 10,000 people, and that was like a legal protest, you know. Rage Against the Machine, like, led the protests with all of these veterans down the street. It was amazing. We were like, it was a really hot day. We were giving people water and stuff out of Rhinoceropolis. That was a really cool day.
It was an illegal protest or legal?
It was legal, but it was also so huge that they couldn't really do anything about it. It was just this mass of people. Rage Against the Machine put on a free show at the, like, convention center, and then, like, literally, like, the entire show, like, took the streets and just walked down Brighton Boulevard down to, like, downtown. It was nuts. The street was, like, shut down. It was very cool. But it was, you know, it was, like, led by veterans. It was pretty amazing. Like, calling for an end to the war.
Man, I wish Rage Against the Machine would come back, man. We need them.
I know. Where are they at? Like, I've always been saying that, like, if there was ever a time for Rage, like, I guess there's always a good time for that band. But we need another one. Pop music is so, like, apolitical right now. I really think we need people to be saying shit on the mainstream.
Bieber.
Yeah, what if Bieber came out and was just like, you know, talking about like indigenous cultures and shit, like indigenous struggle.
That would be amazing, because he's from Canada, right?
Yeah.
Might as well talk about music then. Yeah, why is that, man? Like, what the fuck is wrong with the music industry, man?
I don't even know if it's just music. It seems like young people around, it's sort of like, oh, you know, like, you care about politics, like, you know, we've been there and done that kind of thing. Like, you know, it almost, like, people are sort of, like, bored of it. It's like, what else is new kind of thing. It's like, yeah, shit's fucked up, we know. Like, why do you need to even talk about it kind of thing? And it's just, like, people have, like, really given up to the fact that it's just, like, really fucked. And it just, like, this weird apathy kind of thing that is really annoying to me.
I think social media actually plays a huge role in that, you know?
Sure.
Like, people are so alienated, and, like, we all experience the world now through these filters, and we just can filter out whatever it is we don't. Whatever we don't want to know, don't want to see.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I don't know.
I mean, to go back to the music industry, like, I think, you know, pop music, though, like, what you hear on the radio is literally more controlled than ever. Since the music industry collapsed, you know, it's like, it was this huge consolidation of wealth, kind of, and so there's literally only a few, like, massive corporate record labels, you know, that are basically controlling everything you hear and see in the mainstream. And that's all hugely corporate, and so it's like, they're not going to be having any artists sort of, like, second guessing or like being some sort of like subversive or like really like radical artist, they're not going to be having that in the mainstream. They're like it. There couldn't be a band like Rage Against the Machine getting as popular anymore, I don't think. At least like it would be a lot harder for them.
Yeah, I mean, even like I think about Death Grips, you know. I mean, I think about a lot of like the new hip hop that's kind of come out in the last few years and how it's
so sick, man. They're an incredible band.
But like I think about how like these bands like the Action Bronsons and Odd Futures, like they seem totally independent. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, a year and a half later, you find out, oh, they were on a major label and there was someone in the shadows, you know, like pulling these strings. And so
that's definitely the case with Odd Future now. But I think they genuinely did blow up by their own. They were making their own shit, but now there's like a shit ton of money behind those kids, yeah, for sure.
But like it's like a different kind of like, but like I look at the like these kinds of bands that like they seem like they're revolting, but
well, that's the whole thing of like indie as marketing ploy, you know, like you just give it a certain look and then it feels like it's DIY or indie or something, but it's totally not or whatever. Yeah,
but like, you know, but I mean like more on like a like those guys are treated like they're these rebels, you know. But they won't actually, like, as long as they're not talking about the war, like they can say George Bush is a dickhead, but they can't, you know, they can't say end capitalism, you know.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, sure, I know what you mean. Yeah.
Well, here's another. You reference a lot of new age shit in your music. Yeah. You're kind of new agey guy. You have crystals.
I have crystal collection, actually.
Do you have a crystal castle?
That'd be cool.
So you were really excited about 2012, about like this, like, you know, massive, you know, humanity was going to be transformed.
A shift in consciousness. Yeah, that's what I was looking forward to.
How do you think that panned out? What do you think? Where are we at?
Well, yeah, I mean, for years now, you know, I had been studying 2012, like reading all these books about it. You know, my whole album Dark Rift was all about, you know, crossing our Earth, crossing through this like centermost point of our galaxy and like going through this complete, like almost like down to our DNA, like cellular level, like us sort of evolving and like changing as people. And like a whole shift in like a global consciousness, basically, like raising up the vibration of the entire planet. And these are like these things that I'm reading, you know, and these theories that I was really interested in. And sure, a lot of it was all, you know, theoretical and even sort of like really idealistic thinking. But I really responded to that, and it'd be sort of like a soul kind of concept that I was working with within my art. And then, yeah, you know, I mean, 2012 came and went, you know, December 21st, 2012, that was like a date I was really looking forward to. Not that I was thinking some, like, insane, crazy, like, thing was going to happen on that night or whatever, and that is going to be some big explosion or whatever, but it was like, yeah, it almost seems like shit is just darker than ever now. And I've been thinking about this sort of like, where was this huge shift that was supposed to happen? You know, like what were the Mayans talking about? And like, where is this sort of like next age of humanity kind of, or like it was supposed to, you know, like prophesized golden age type shit. Like maybe, you know, like galactic time being, you know, so super slow, like tens of thousands of years, and it's like we're at the very start of a new age, definitely, but it's like it has a lot to go before, like, this golden age shit will be long after we're gone.
You know, I mean, if you think about it, though, you know, Occupy happened right before 2012, so...
Sure, at the time, I was like, wow, this is almost, like, maybe this is all... you know, 2012 as a year was so crazy globally. You know, it was, you know, this, and I thought that was all sort of leading up to some sort of like real climax, kind of like all the protests, like the Arab Spring, like the riots in Europe. Like, it was all so crazy that year, you know, Occupy. And I was like, wow, you know, there's like a global movement happening, you know, like, and like there still is, like, people obviously want change, you know, but it's sort of just like petered out with no climax. It was really weird. Like, there's all this weird momentum all over the planet, people, and then it's like, wait a minute, what, where did it go or something? It was really weird.
Well, yeah, and I mean, who knows? I mean, I don't necessarily buy the 2012 thing. I don't know if I necessarily believe it or whatever. I don't know, whatever. I mean, they repressed it. They violently repressed it all over, you know? That's why, yeah. Like, the only people who are still fighting the power anywhere are people who are just dedicated. And it's with, you know, pretty great risk.
I was really into, like, this whole idea, even that, you know, all these type conspiracy type stuff that, you know, like the governments of the world were like really planning for this sort of like event that was going to happen, and they knew all about it already, and that was part of the whole conspiracy of the Denver airport and stuff, was like there's these massive underground bases there that are like holding chambers for elite people, so like for some like future event that hasn't happened yet, like a 2012 type, like end of the world type thing, where these people can go into hiding and like still rule the world type shit, like it to retain power. And so I thought, you know, I would read all this stuff for, you know, 2012, there was going to be like alien disclosure, and or like, yeah, that the governments were just sort of waiting for this thing to happen. And who knows, maybe something did happen on an underground level, and our governments are, I don't know, maybe it was all like just kept hidden from us or something.
When's the last time you flew to Denver?
Like maybe 6 months ago.
The airport now is more locked down than it's ever been. I mean, it's, they're definitely building it up to be a fucking fortress.
Why? What do you mean locked down?
I mean, it's just like, you know, you used to, the highway used to just go straight there, then it would go left. Now it like cuts all the way around the airport, and you drive through this like almost fenced in area that's like separated from the airport that circles the airport. And then you drive through these security checkpoints, which there's no one in them now, but
whoa,
there will be. So yeah, I mean,
It's almost like militarized there, and you can feel a military presence even if it's like literally underground, like under the airport. I think there's like literally tunnels that run from that airport to like NORAD in Colorado Springs and shit. I've heard that, like this whole network out there, it's nuts.
From like a planning, from like an urban planning standpoint, it makes perfect sense for the Denver airport. It's one of the main hubs in the country. And it's on this like isolated land, the size of Manhattan, that could just go out as far as you want it to. I mean, it's just prairie dogs out there. So it's like, and then you could see those mountains right there. I mean, I actually believe that it makes perfect sense to have something like that.
Well, no, sure. It's also like really, really inland. You know, if there was ever some sort of like attack on America, they're not going to be hitting Denver, and it's going to be really hard for anyone to get to Denver. So it's like, it's a really safe place, kind of like that.
Yeah, same with global warming, rising sea levels. Like, that's one of the reasons I moved to Denver, was because it felt pretty safe. I was like, well, shit, safe enough for the NWO, safe enough for me. What about, or this, something else I was going to ask you. Aliens, man.
Aliens, man.
So, you know, you mentioned disclosure, and one of my biggest beefs with like the whole UFO shit is that like a lot of people who talk about like stuff like disclosure and UFO stuff are really easy to ridicule, and the topic is really ridiculed. And I feel like it's such an important subject, and just no one seriously talks about it.
Well, no, it's because it's too profound for a lot of people. It's like, oh, you're crazy. You're talking about UFOs. You're talking about aliens. It's like, because people just, it's like this knee-jerk reaction to a lot of people. Because if what you're implying by simply saying UFOs are real and aliens are real, that literally, like, what we've been told our whole lives and the whole history of the world and stuff has all been a lie and shit. And, like, what science has told us about the universe and everything. And it's like, so the implications are huge. If we were to, like, if it were to come out in the press or something, or if the, like, extraterrestrials were to somehow, like, one day just make themselves be known, kind of, it would be the most profound event in human history, you know? It would be, like, so people don't want to sort of, like, accept that, I don't think, because it's like, too big. It's too intense for people to think about. So they just dismiss it as people being crazy.
And what I don't understand is, like, even if you talk to a radical about UFOs and shit, you know, like, they just have this, like, you know, response, and it's like, well, who gives a fuck? You know, where people are starving and the sea levels are rising, and it's like, exactly, dude. Let's get the fuck out of here. Like, let's go to Pleiades. Let's go to Gilly's 82, man. Let's get the fuck out of here, you know?
Yeah, I've never, like, I've always, you know, heard about these, like, really, like, benevolent extraterrestrials that are sort of, like, watching over humanity, and they have been forever, and it's like, they really love us, kind of, like, we're their sort of galactic brothers and sisters, and that they don't want to see us, like, killing ourselves, or, like, they're sort of, like, studying us, like, what went wrong on Earth, kind of thing, and, like, you know, there's tons of stories and evidence of like ETs and UFOs coming and like shutting down nuclear weapons and stuff. Mm-hmm. And this is like well documented, like even top military officials, they will say this, like, you know, they'll be like tons of nuclear warheads like armed and they'll fucking UFOs will show up and the shit just gets shut down, like it turns them off, and they're like, no one has access to be able to turn these things off, and like these fucking like UFOs show up and it just like shuts down, or like missiles being shot out of the air by UFOs, things like that. Like they're sort of like kind of really weird, like lots of UFO stuff surrounding any sort of like nuclear operations. It's wild.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like that's when they really started popping up a lot, is around the
nuclear testing. I think it's totally connected. It's like right at that exact time. Yeah, we dropped the bomb, and all of a sudden, like UFOs start appearing all over pop culture and stuff, and like it's something that's really deeply connected with our own psyche. It's like this modern mythology kind of, and to dismiss them, I think it is really like, just really ignorant, kind of. It's just, yeah. There's this really amazing thing on YouTube I always tell people to check out called the Disclosure Project, which was a press conference that happened in 2001, like literally right before 9/11. And that's why I don't think it ever really got the press that it deserves. But it's like this press conference with like dozens and dozens of these insane like top government guys, fucking military officials, like people who worked within the CIA and stuff, and they're all basically telling their in detailed experiences with either ETs, extraterrestrials, or like UFOs. And there's this one guy who's just like telling about all these different like species and where they come from, and like that they look just like us, like these like hominid aliens and stuff. And it's fucking insane. And it's like totally legit. These are like real fucking military guys. And you can watch it on YouTube. It's unbelievable. And it's like, I don't see how you can like watch something like that and sort of dismiss it as like fake or something. To me, like, the evidence is there. People are like, oh, where's the proof? And it's like, dude, it's like there. There's so much proof already that this shit is going on, you know?
Yeah, we invaded Iraq with more proof.
Yeah.
With less like, proof, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I think that press conference that was, I think it was on C-SPAN. I think they actually held it. I mean, they've held those.
It was like really legit, and they're talking about fucking aliens. It's insane.
Like the shit that always interests me is the stuff with like about Roosevelt, like all these people who've come out and you know, like were witnesses when Roosevelt would meet with the gray aliens and like developing, you know, stealth technology and all this stuff. But, you know, the problem is with the Disclosure Project is that guy, Stephen Greer, ends up as kind of like, I don't know if it was in the, they assassinated his character, but, you know, he would charge people $10,000 to go out into a park somewhere, and then he would bring down a UFO for them. And, you know, anytime people start, you know, getting on some Scientology, you know, pay to meet God shit, you know, that's when you really start fucking shit up.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I agree.
So I feel like, and because he was like the main dude behind that, I feel like it kind of sucked a lot of the wind out of that movement. But yeah, I mean, I would love to, I'd love to see that shit become more, you know, more of a subject that people take seriously, because it's a serious subject, man.
A lot of people do, though, for sure. And it's like something, there's like a really high percentage of the population that say they believe in UFOs now. It's sort of like becoming more mainstream than it ever has. And people are, I think, the people are ready, kind of, like, to know it. It's like the government is holding it back, you know? But it's like, I think the public is kind of like, we can deal with it.
Well, you know what?
There was that crazy quote of, like, the Vatican came out and said, you know, they're like, if extraterrestrials were real, they're like, we would, you know, we would accept that because it's like they would, you know, be under God also, kind of thing. Or like, God would accept extraterrestrials. The fucking Vatican said that. And it's like, whoa, you know.
Yeah, and they have their own, you know, they have their own secret service that's,
for
you
sure.
know, getting their own intel. Yeah, I mean, you know, a whole nother dimension to it is, because I've probably watched all those videos, and, you know, the stuff where they talk about companies like Boeing and Lockheed Martin and all these people, you know, getting their hands on certain technologies and then just, like, you know, being the ones reverse engineering stuff and then just shelving the shit so that, like, yeah, we're never going to have anti-gravity, like, we're going to stick with fossil fuels because that's what our economy is based on, you know.
Yeah, that stuff really pisses me off, like halting the forward motion of technology and stuff just because you're like milking fossil fuels and stuff. It's like fucking mental. Like, even just like something simple, you know, like having electric vehicles on the road and stuff, and like, you know, like this is totally possible technology. It's like we have it, or, you know, like free energy. There's this really crazy documentary about like different scientists and inventors throughout time that have like sort of been fucking with and inventing like free energy systems, basically. And then like these like crazy type men in black type people show up and like fucking shut them down type shit. It's like really wild. And so there's definitely like a push to keep a lot of these type of ideas like completely silent, because it renders the government kind of useless, or like these huge corporations, you know? They're not going to have that, like, some free energy shit away, you know? So you tell that to fucking ExxonMobil, they're going to freak out. So they're going to shut you down at all costs.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, it's like, if you look at the trajectory of, you know, the last 120 years, like, you know, World War I was fought on horses, and then, you know, all of a sudden, around 1910, people have cars, you know, 1930, the first plane, you know, 1960, you know, they're going into space, 1968, they land on the moon, and then nothing, you know, 70 years, we go from horses to landing on the moon, and then in the 50 years after that, like, what have
we have just stopped, yeah. Yeah, that's really interesting. I know there's some good thinkers who have really, like, delved hard into that subject of, like, where's the advancement, you know? Some would say that, you know, like, culturally we've advanced a lot, and which is true, you know, from the time we were on the moon, you know, look at what's happened within, like, pop culture and stuff. But still, I think a lot of it is just, like, completely... Yeah, it's just halted because of capitalism and fossil fuels. It's just fucking nuts. It's terrible, actually.
All right, well, since...
And what are we going to do? Like, literally just keep going until, like, we milk the world dry of oil? And then what do we do? It's just crazy. Like, that tar sand shit is so crazy. It's like this super crude, like, low quality oil, and they're just, like, destroying the environment up there just to, like, get a few barrels of oil and stuff. It's just really mental. We're completely addicted globally.
I mean, they're doing it in New York, but they're doing it in Colorado too, man. There's a tar sands in Colorado, on the border of Utah and Colorado. There's, like, huge fossil fuel deposits of both shale and tar sands, and they're going ahead trying to develop that stuff. I mean, that what's happening in the tar sands, they're trying to move it right over here, and with fracking, like, they don't give a fuck.
Have you ever, like Chris Hedges talks a lot about that, like, this sort of just, like, capitalism gone horribly wrong and horribly dark to the point where, like, we're setting ourselves up to, like, literally having no future, like, because we're living so in the present, and we're, like, completely poisoning these areas, and they'll, like, never come back, where it's, like, these kill zones where, like, you go in, you fucking milk this place all dry of all of its natural resources, and then you just move on to the next, and then you leave this, like, totally toxic, barren wasteland. And this is all in America, like, in, like, the Appalachians and stuff, like, all that coal mining shit. There's just these, like, dead zones that are, like, or, like, completely clear-cut forests, you know, that are just gone. And it's, like, this is what we're leaving as our legacy for this endless need of consumption, you know? Just, like, it's totally mental. And it's, like, where are we going? What are we gonna do when we've cut down all the trees, you know? That seems like such a cliche or stupid thing to say, but it's like, that's really what we're doing.
It's fucking sad, man. I don't know if you followed, like, what happened in Arkansas. I mean, first of all along these pipelines, like, they're fucking leaking, like, mad, you know, like, every week.
It's sloppy, like, as fuck. And, like, completely poisoning all those rivers in Canada. Like, that shit, you can't repair that.
But it's, I mean, this shit's happening in America now, too. Did you see any of the footage from Arkansas?
I know there was just some spill out there, but I don't even know.
One of their press releases was something like, well, it was mostly, you know, alligators that were, you know, hostile. You know, what's the word for an animal that, like, doesn't belong somewhere and takes over?
Like a pest. Like, oh, fuck these alligators.
They're like, well, it mostly killed alligators and poisonous snakes. It's like, what?
Yeah, we, and this is the stuff, we've gotten to this point where Oh man, that stuff pisses me off like nothing else, man.
It's so sad because, you know, they can't defend themselves, man. They're just animals, you know. They're just out there hanging out, like swimming in the fucking black shit, like not.
But it's a poisonous snake. It could hurt you. It deserves to die, man.
All right, well, let's go to some. I was watching this TED Talk the other day. It was actually a TED Talk that was banned from TED Talks.
Was it Graham Hancock?
The one about science and religion.
Who was it?
You know what? I don't even know who it was. I could Google it real quick.
There was a couple. There was two ones that were banned recently. One was Graham Hancock, who is like this personal hero of mine, and a lot to a lot of other people too. He's like this. He's someone you should really get into, or anyone listening. It's like really renegade archaeologist and like freedom fighter, like someone who's. And his whole talk was all about psychedelics and basically like the war for your mind, basically like people. You know, a war on consciousness, like, you know, saying it's illegal for someone to experiment with their own body and like explore their own mind and stuff like this. And, you know, that's this like really radical thing. And his was censored too. His talk was like shut down. And it was like this, you know, this really beautiful lecture, you know, and he's like this really intelligent man. And yeah, they like shut it down for the reasons of like this bullshit like pseudoscience tag, you know, which is like really ridiculous. And
oh, is that what they said it was? They said it was pseudoscience.
And they're just talking about like the spiritual dimension, you know, which like science as a law like cannot understand, you know. Science only tests the physical world, you know, and so these people that are talking about anything like spiritual, like, yeah, Ted was not having it. It was really interesting. And it's become this huge controversy now because a lot of people, you know, Graham Hancock is like a hugely popular. And so when you fucking censor someone like that, it's like, oh shit, you know, why? So
yeah, that's it's crazy because this other one was along the same lines.
Yeah, exactly. It was two of them together, and they both got censored.
The one I'm talking about is Rupert Sheldrake. Like, I've always identified as an atheist because I don't believe in God. But, you know, I've had precognitive experiences. I've felt things. I believe that there's more to. I don't believe I have a soul necessarily, unfortunately. I wish I did. I believe that there's more, you know, there's more to things. And so that's what this guy was talking about. Was basically, he was talking about how, you know, we, like how science, you know, believes that it killed God, you know, and how, you know, scientists can go on about theoretical physics and multiverses and all this stuff that they can't prove, or stuff that ends up being proven wrong, and like sticking to it with almost like a fundamentalist religious zeal. But at the same time, they can adamantly say, you know, no, there's no interconnectivity. There's no psychic phenomenon. There's nothing more to the universe than matter.
I'm glad you brought this up because I was just reading this whole essay. It was just about this exact topic, you know, about the silencing of these guys' thinking, and it was talking about this word scientism. That was, you know, this sort of like insane religious dogma of scientists, basically, of what is real and what is not, you know, and how, you know, that's just how it always goes. But it's like that, you know, even just 20 years ago, like quantum physics and stuff was like fringe shit. Like you were crazy thinking about that. And now it's sort of like real commonplace or whatever. And yeah, to be like now, you know, like scientists like having these fucking knee-jerk reactions against anyone talking about it, like spirituality or yeah, like out-of-body type things, or, you know, telepathy, like or yeah, the interconnectedness of nature and stuff, and it's like, that's not real, you know, like, or yeah, that's, yeah, it, we can't test that, you know, so it's like, it's not, and it's like, if you, a lot of people's careers, like, get fucking destroyed and stuff for even talking about this stuff. So hopefully we'll see it change, you know, in the next 10 years or whatever, where some of these ideas start becoming more accepted in the more mainstream.
I mean, what blows my mind is, you know, Stanford Research International, or Stanford College University, they, you know, they pioneered that whole psychic spying network, and it's really well documented that... that they could pull people off the street and get them to do really amazing shit with their minds. And it's just like, it blows my mind that, like, you know, we, like, I listen to a lot of TED Talks, and, you know, it's always like this fucking capitalistic techno fetishism. And you would think within that realm that there would be some space for some, you know, critical inquiry into,
for sure,
into this stuff, and like, they just, I just find it interesting that they leave it alone, you know.
That's when the, you know, the conspiracy theorists have started going crazy with that, you know, like, what sort of agenda are they pushing type shit, you know, or like, why were these ideas silenced or taken down, you know, like, who are they protecting, kind of thing, you know. So it's weird, definitely. But you know, man, you should look into Graham Hancock. He's like the shit, you know. He's all about like Atlantis and basically like a pre-existing grand civilization on our planet that's been like hidden, and just basically saying that we're a lot older than we think that we are, and that our whole human history is like radically different than what we're told. It's really amazing. He's like so cool. I love that shit. Just like all about, you know, the insane, unexplained ancient cultures. Like, how did they build these things? You know, like insane ancient megaliths, like ancient technologies. And it's really cool.
Yeah, like, you know, the 70,000 year old temples in Peru or whatever. They're like,
yeah. And it's not even like ancient alien stuff. It's more like ancient human stuff. Like, we were of a total, much more advanced than we like to tell ourselves that we were, you know, thousands of years ago.
Yeah, I'll check it out. Why not? You know, if I can listen to Alex Jones after the Boston bombings for a couple hours, then I can check out Graham Hancock.
For sure. Have you seen that sort of viral image that's going around of just like online about the Boston bombings? Like, someone made it. I don't know. It's like this long thing, and it's saying, you know, like, who are these men? Like, why are we not paying attention? Like, these weird, like, CIA operatives that are on camera with, like, these huge backpacks and stuff. And then their backpack is, like, the one that's, like, destroyed on the street and stuff. And it's fucking crazy. Just basically saying that the bombers were framed and stuff, you know? It's really wild.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know.
That's a whole... Yeah, that's a weird rabbit hole to get down into.
Yeah, I don't know. I try to, like, I don't know. Like, you know, one of my friends recently was like, you shouldn't, you know, we shouldn't assume that it wasn't a conspiracy, you know, and everyone else shouldn't assume that it is. And it's like, okay, you know, I don't know. But look, one guy's dead. They shot the other dude in the throat so he can't talk. Like,
yeah,
that's one of my, I don't know who it was, one of my friends the other day was like, oh, you know, great, you know, they fucking, if they caught him, you know, thank God, like, I'll know this is real when I can hear this guy talk. And then, and of course, we're never going to get to hear him talk because they shot him through the fucking throat.
Yeah, that's really wild, man.
Oh, man. Well... I don't know, man. Any last words? Any recommended readings? Any words of wisdom?
I don't know. Just keep up the good fight, man. I really appreciate what you're doing. I love your new music and stuff. It's so cool. You're like one of the last American heroes, Tim.
Well, Travis, you know I got so much love for you, man.
Right.
Much respect, brother.